The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
It's a busy old time for arable farmers, and there's blackgrass to consider again.
With that blackgrass really only just beginning to think about poking through, timing is going to be everything once again.
Sean Sparling's here with some timely agronomy advice and a look at the state of the fields. We'll get a rural crime update. And how's your fodder situation?
We just want to make sure people have an idea before they get into their winter housing what the fodder is looking like.
Janet Montgomery from Barenbrugg's looking at the need for a fodder budget. Plus, we'll check the grain and livestock markets and see what the weather holds for us this week.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Good morning to you. Hope it's been a good week. I'm Steve Orchard. This is the Farming Programme podcast on Sunday, October 13th, 2024. In the news, it'll come as no surprise that this harvest is officially the second worst since 1983 and that many farmers are struggling to drill new crops. Estimates are that wheat yields will be down 21% on last year, with barley and oilseed rape even worse. If you're in a Severn Trent water catchment area, you only have until the end of next month to submit environmental grant applications to ensure funded projects are completed this year. You have to complete the project and claim by the 31st of December. And how's your fodder situation as we head towards another winter? Don't know? Maybe it's time for a bit of a review and to get preparations in place. Janet Montgomery from Barenbrugg joins us once again and is suggesting more than just a quick check of the barn.
Basically, what we're looking for is for folks to have an idea of the quantity and quality of the winter feed that they have available to them. The last couple of years, meaning 22 and 23, I think we've seen more widespread problems in the UK. I mean, certainly in 2023, it was just wet for everybody. This year, 2024, we've sort of had more regional pockets of good or bad weather. And so we haven't seen as uniform a trend, but there are places certainly where the quantity and or the quality of forage will be down this year. And so we just want to make sure people have an idea before they get into their winter housing what the fodder is looking like.
Are we facing an emergency on this, do you think?
No, I wouldn't have said by any stretch. Certainly not on any sort of medium to large scale. But I think just in the aftermath of the last couple of years where things have been a bit tough in terms of winter supply, we're keen for people to have an idea what they're dealing with before that situation smacks them in the face.
Okay. So what can you actually do to put this fodder budget together? Let's start perhaps with quantity.
Sure. So basically is having a look at how many bales have you produced, how many of your pits are full. An important thing that we talk about in the article, obviously, the flow on from quantity is quality. And a big thing that affects the amount of quantity you truly have is the dry matter content of either the silage or the bales, the pit or the bales. And so having a dry matter content test is really important so that you know what the true dry matter is that you're offering the cows.
So how do you actually do that test?
You take a sample and you send it into an accredited lab and they will tell you. You can certainly do homemade tests. The last microwave I had was in 2006 when I used it to dry some forage samples to see what the dry matter content was. And then it was unsuitable for using for food. So that no longer available. I don't recommend the home test. It is much more accurate if you send it to an accredited lab and they will tell you what the dry matter content is.
So having done the test, what's the calculation to make sure you've got enough fodder for the animals that you've got?
Well, you need to consider how many animals you have and how much you need to be feeding them per day, typically calculated on a dry matter basis. That amount will differ a bit based on what type of livestock you have, what class they're in, what your goals are for them in terms of production. And then basically multiplying the amount of dry matter kilos you need per day by the number of animals that you need to feed over the winter, comparing that to the amount of supply that you have.
And I guess it's sensible to kind of overstate the demand. So make sure you've got more than you need.
Definitely. Absolutely. That's the correct side of caution to err upon. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And quality, the two are obviously linked. You need to analyze your silage. If the quality is not brilliant, is there anything you can do about it?
Yes, absolutely. By sending samples into your accredited lab, they will send you back a feed report. And typically the ones in the UK will give you a range. Are you in the appropriate feeding range for the class of livestock? Are you too low or are you too high? For a variety of characteristics. And so you can make some plans based on that. I mean, what we look at first is the sort of macronutrition, and speak to your own nutritionists about this, but your macronutrition blocks to make sure there's enough fiber, enough energy, enough protein. And after that, we start looking at a bit of the more of the micro components, which is there enough iodine, is there enough calcium, etc., which again differs based on the class of livestock and what you're trying to do with them. So it can be that you have enough quantity of fodder, and that is the biggest thing, that there's enough quantity there, but perhaps there's elements that are lacking and you don't want your animals to become deficient in those elements. And so whatever those elements are, you can then speak to your nutritionist, your feed company, to see what the solutions are for rectifying those particular deficiencies.
And as a solution, you're talking supplements, presumably?
Yes, of various sorts. And that can take the form of maybe you just need to add in a bit of grain, a bit of beans, which is what we did last year. But it can also take the form of you need to being add in some mineral powder on top or things like that.
Okay. And then really to summarize, we're talking about a fodder budget as essential, not just a nice thing. Yeah.
Yes. And I think what we have come up against in the last few years is people making an assumption based on their long-term production. If I have two clamps that are full, I will have enough feed. And often, you know, you get your feel in for your farm. That's often accurate. What we're encouraging people to do is if there's any sort of sign in the system that the quality or quantity of the forage is different, measure those things now so you know what's happening.
Do something about it.
Exactly. I think folks, more so in beef systems, can get caught out at calving time. In dairy systems, your feedback loops on how your animals are doing are a little bit quicker because you can see an impact on the milk liters in the tank. What we see is sheep, beef production. You bring animals through the winter and they look fine. And then you have a bit of a fall down at calving or lambing because there have been deficiencies that you haven't noticed. So it's helpful to front load the system with information.
Understood. That's great, Janet. Thank you very much for that. If somebody wants to have a chat with you or get some more info on this, where should they go?
To the Barenbrug UK website, and all of our contact details are on there. You're very welcome to contact the office and they can put you in touch with your regional rep, or I'm very happy to have a conversation at any time at the drop of a hat. Very happy.
Janet, great to have you on the Farming Programme once again. Thank you very much for talking to us about fodder budgets today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a busy old time for arable farmers in particular just now, and the perennial problem of black grass starts to hit again. What can you do? Here's some thoughts from our crop doctor, independent agronomist Sean Sparling. Good morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. I know, all hands to the pump, a real flurry of activity out here. Serious drop of rain last week, as we all know, but this week could have been an awful lot worse than it's actually turned out to be after looking at the forecast. So a few drier, windier days, turning much colder now, though. Bit of ice on the windscreen overnight last week, too. So this continuing dryish spell of weather and the fact we're into mid-October means the drills can hold back no more, and we are most definitely off. Blackgrass, always a very interesting plant, and indeed a phenomenon in its own right as well. Dormancy in the blackgrass seeds is either quite high or quite low in any one season. I'm sorry if I'm getting too technical. So we knew that the blackgrass, as I said last week, apparently had moderate to high levels of dormancy in that seed burden this year as a result of that wet, cloudy, cold middle summer period, amongst other things, which will undoubtedly have disrupted the seed set in the blackgrass population, just like it has in all the other grasses. So the rain that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks, coupled with the cultivations that we've all been carrying out on our stale seedbed, should, you would have thought, it have encouraged that blackgrass to flush much sooner than this. But in many, many situations, the blackgrass didn't actually appear until earlier this last week, much of it coming through in the last few days, actually, and finally now in the stale seedbed. Not to mention in and under the oilseed rape crops, which are romping away, incidentally, doubling in size, thankfully, for some bits over the last week or so. And unfortunately, in some of the earlier drilled wheat fields, which went into some questionable whole blackgrass land as well. So from an agronomy and a good practice perspective, the wet weather of the last 3 weeks has actually been a godsend, because it stopped too many of these bad blackgrass fields from actually being forced in before the glyphosate has had a chance to take out that all important first big flush of blackgrass. Literally then every cloud has a silver lining. So with that blackgrass really only just beginning to think about poking through, timing is going to be everything once again. We keep talking about how the first 2 to 3 weeks of October is the key for blackgrass emergence, and that is bearing out incredibly clearly this year because of all that. With it being so slow to come, we were wondering if the wet, cold, cloudy, miserable summer had actually done it some damage, but no, it's just a little bit late coming through, and I honestly think that the next couple of weeks is going to be way more significant from a blackgrass point of view, and we could see an awful lot of blackgrass germinating and emerging over that time. And that's why you need to make sure you've got the most effective pre-em herbicide brew lined up for the fields in question. If you've got easy blackgrass, although I'm not sure there is such a thing anymore, and by easy I mean you can control your blackgrass by using flufenicet, pendimethalin, DFF type brews, then there are plenty of product choices out there. Although there are a few supply issues with liquid forms of Avidex, Avidex Factor, and one or two of the other staples we've got used to over the last few years, but hopefully those will soon sort themselves out. So it's important to tailor your pre-em mix to suit the severity of the site you're dealing with, and do cost them out. You know, spend the right amount of money on the best combination of actives for the site you're dealing with, rather than just blanket bombing everything with the most expensive mix you can get your hands on, and therefore you'll end up spending way more than you need to if blackgrass is not the issue. So speak to your advisor, consider the weed issues of each field, and then make sure you get these products on within 48 hours of drilling. That way they stand the best chance of doing the best possible job for you. And make no mistake, getting them on in that first 48 hours is absolutely vital. When you go spraying as well, get them on as carefully and as best as you can. Take as much care as you would take over applying your flag leaf fungicide. Optimum application is almost as important as the products themselves. They're expensive things, and they're literally your last line of defense against blackgrass and grass weeds in particular. And you all know that if you get your drill timing, your pre-em choice, or the application of that pre-em wrong, then you're going to be staring at blackgrass all the way through till harvest next year. And where you use glyphosate in a stale seedbed, for goodness sake, give it long enough to do some good. 2 hours is not enough. You need at least 12, possibly and preferably 24 hours before you go cultivating. Slugs increasing in activity as well since that rain last week. Some fields taking quite significant damage to the seed itself within days of drilling. And we're seeing high levels of above ground grazing as well in some fields, particularly in the knottier soils or after peas and rape, but also on some of the lighter ones too. Mealy cabbage aphid flourishing in some fields of rape this autumn too. Unusual to see them in such big numbers at this time of year. And where plants are smaller or more backwards, then infestations of mealy cabbage can kill them. Pyrethroids can have an effect, but the main issue with mealy cabbage aphid is that waxy coating and their habit of clumping together four or five deep. So insecticides can be an absolute waste of time, because all you're doing is half the job of the outside layer of the mealy cabbage aphid, and you'll do sod all to the rest below them. You'll do more damage to the predators and the beneficials, and the mealy aphids come out pretty well unscathed. So speak to your advisor. If you do go, you'll need to include a surfactant type wetter to help penetrate that waxy coating. Winter oats going in now too. Winter rye and winter barley ideally need to be in by the end of this month, so lots to do. Winter beans going in now as well, believe it or else. Plenty early enough for winter beans. They do way better drilled late October or into November. And winter beans in and up too soon get absolutely caned by the first frost. The winter kill levels can be significant. You're only aiming between 18 and 25 plants a square metre established anyway with winter beans, so you haven't got much to play with in the first place. And with 1,000 seed weights and germination levels so variable again this year, just make sure you work out your seed rate based on the beans you're actually going to sow, not last year's or your neighbour's beans, and drill them a good 3 inches or more deep if you're going to go and drill this early. That way you're going to help to delay emergence, and it'll be crucial to get your pre-ems on them too, because we've so few options available to us post-em. And time these pre-ems well too. Pre-em propizamide, the only real answer of course for blackgrass, although curb type products applied at this time of year are unlikely to do a long lasting job in such warm conditions. You have to apply that as well within 7 days of drilling as per the label, so it's going to be way too warm to get much more than 40 or 50 days at best residual out of the propizamide. You'll get 100 days or more if it goes on in the cold in November. Just give that some thought. Anyway, happy days. Let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. Still to come on the Farming Programme podcast, the markets, the weather, and where are we with rural crime? We've an update with Lincolnshire Police next.
Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
I'm Steve Orchard. This is the Farming Programme podcast on Sunday, October 13th, 2024. Where are we at the moment on the rural crime scene? Let's get the latest from Lincolnshire Police's Inspector Chris Davis. Good morning, Chris. Let's start with that scourge of the arable farmer hare coursing. There's been a bit of progress in recent years, hasn't there?
We do target hare coursing. I know people kind of probably get a bit bored of us going on about Op Galileo and targeting hare coursing, but the reality is we know that brings criminality to our county, and that's what we're trying to avoid it happening. We know we've seen since the rural crime action team's been set up again and been put underneath our specialist operations team, we've seen a year-on-year reduction in amount of calls for service for hare coursing. Part and parcel of that is also some really good results with how off the back of the community talking to us, letting us know when they see things and giving us that information, which we are really stressed. We really need the community's assistance, the farming community, to get out there. If they see things, let us know. We can get behind it, get it stopped. That sort of information helps us. And we've had a legislation change in 2022, which put a couple more fences in place, which made it a lot more easy to deal with the offences, but it also gave us some really good powers. So I think last year, so 23 to 24, we only had 256 calls for service for hare coursing. Previous year, it was just shy of 600. And the year before that, believe it or not, it was up to 1600. And that's a massive decrease.
That is a fantastic figure to be able to quote. The cynic in me says, has it gone away or has it gone somewhere else?
It's quite possibly gone elsewhere. I think it has gone away a little bit though as well. So a recent job we had, three males sighted by one of the local farmers. He reported into us, the rural crime team, dogs, armed response, because it's all part of that bigger team of officers, got behind it, pursued it. From Swineshead Bridge to Great Hail, the offenders made off on foot. We managed to locate them. That was in 2022, late November 2022. That court case has been rolling on. More and more work done by ourselves. Some really good work with CPS, who's given us a dedicated prosecutor, who's got all the information they need to support us. And the final court result were that all three males were prosecuted. They received a £700 fine each, a CBO for 10 years each relating to coming into Lincolnshire or Cambridgeshire with sight hounds and trespassing on land. The vehicles, phones, all the equipment in relation to hare coursing seized, forfeiture of the dogs, compensation to Lincolnshire, £15,900 each for kennelling costs, because it was kennelling these dogs while this court case rolled on, victim surcharge of £300, CPS cost of £500. Pretty sure they were banned as well from driving for a year. That all has an effect. It gets around the hare coursing community, and people need to know the risk that they are taking, not just with ourselves, but with other forces. We're talking to other forces continuously, letting them know who we see as being an issue, who's travelling around. Forces talk to each other, and hopefully we can start spreading that around and hopefully stop this barbaric sport from continuing.
So these changes in legislation, I know we've had things like the compensation and being able to seize dogs and vehicles and so on, they're starting to work.
Oh, they really have an effect, yes. We know we're making inroads there. I'd say that's potentially one of the biggest effectors on that massive reduction in the amount of hare coursing that we're seeing.
Great stuff. Theft of equipment. GPS seems to be about the favourite, doesn't it?
I'll be careful what I say with this one, because I'm touching some wood here. We haven't seen it for quite a while. There was some earlier on this season, but we did take some action. We stopped a group, dealt with them. They are currently on bail, and we've seemed to have disrupted those offences. So we're hopeful that we managed to reduce that and stop that. We know they are travelling criminals that come from outside the country, and if we can get in there and disrupt their activity, that will stop them. It seems to have done the trick at this time, but obviously we're mindful to keep our eyes out. And what I'd say to all the community out there is, if you've got GPS, get them out of your vehicles overnight, get them locked away, get them in your house if need be, locked away, and make sure that you are marking up these things. So make sure they're identifiable as which farm they belong to, because there is nothing worse than stopping a vehicle, finding some kit in it, and we can't link it to anybody because people don't know the serial numbers. If they report any crime to the police, same with the plant thefts and trailer thefts, things like that, please, please, please give us the serial numbers, the make, model, and any identifying marks you've applied to them.
it's worth that little bit of effort, isn't it? As you say, maybe not stop the crime in the first place, but if they do get caught, you get your stuff back. And it's not cheap kit, let's face it, is it?
Oh, yeah, it's not. No. Earlier this year, I was doing some work with a multiple agency job with Cambridgeshire, and we managed to stop a vehicle that had a piece of plant machinery on it, which our staff, because we've gone out and got them trained up specifically to identify equipment that's been stolen, they managed to identify that something had been stolen 4 years previously and return it to its owner.
Brilliant. And fly tipping? Again, that seems to have gone a little bit quiet, or is that just me?
No, it is still going on in some parts of the county. We've been working with the Environment Agency. I think if you go on their website, you should be able to see it on there. They have a QR code. So if you live in a particular area, you have any fly tipping or see any fly tipping, if you just scan that QR code, it gives you a report form to allow you to put the information in. That information then builds a picture of where the fly tipping is taking place, and that allows us to then concentrate our activities if we need to be looking out for things. I know some of the stuff we think might be connected to cannabis farms, and if we know that a lot of dumps are taking place in a certain area, helps us concentrate on that area to try and target where any offences are taking place.
Because let's face it, you need information, you need input from the community, from farmers, the rural community, to be able to stand a chance of adequately covering this very big county.
It is a very big county, yes. And so all the support we get from the community is really, really very much appreciated. And it makes a difference. That example there, that conviction we had, those people, that wouldn't have happened if a local farmer hadn't seen that, heard that that vehicle was coming our way, pulled over, saw it, called us and let us know where it was. We got behind it and it led from there. That information coming through to us really does make a difference.
And whatever the nature of the crime, report it.
Yes, please. Again, getting that information out there lets us know where offences are taking place. It may be only something small to the local farm if they've had a shed broken into and, say, a drill or something stolen. But to us, we know that crime's taking place there. That means somebody's out and about in that locality. And it helps us then put our patrols in those locations. The rural crime team is actually not a very big team, but we're part of the specialist operations unit, which works 24/7, has cars and dog handlers, armed officers, roads policing officers. They're out all the time. And if we can deny that road network from them by having these officers out there at night and knowing where to target, it will hopefully prevent them from committing offences.
Chris, thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning. Good to hear some success and some great advice there. Inspector Chris Davis from Lincolnshire Police, thank you once again.
Thanks so much, Steve. Thanks for your time.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock and Louth Markets, Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Just a very small show of prime cattle this week, with heifers this week topping at 304.5 pence per kilo and £1,765.95. And that's both for J&S Brooks of Strubby. Moving on to the sheep. This week we had an SQQ of 274.02. And all in average pounds per head of £121.86. Trade very slightly back on the week as it is nationally, with a top price this week of £155 for Fieldview Farm of Boston. On to the cull ewes, an average this week of £77.93. Another good show of cull ewes this week, but trade taking a bit of a knock. Not helped by all the blue tongue restrictions. Top spot went to J.A. and C.J. Jackson of Osgoby at 133. Ewes anywhere this week between £50 to £80 for sort of grazing continental types, and anything a bit better around the £100 mark. Store lambs had a few about again this week. Average this week of £78.79. T.R. Gladwin of Brigg topped at £98 for a super pen of Charolais cross lambs. Moving back to Friday the 4th of October, we held our first autumn special show and sale of suckle calves and store cattle. Overall champion of the day went to F.W. Robinson of Son of Horsington with a super 9-month-old British blue wean calf, which sold for £1,480. C&R Farms of Louth topped at £1,460, and A&N Spillmanners of Lincoln sold purebred Simmental heifers at £1,500. That concludes this week's market report. A reminder, we are taking entries for our second special store and breeding cattle sale on Friday the 18th of October. Entry forms are available on the website, or please give me a call for any entries you might have. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. So what's happening in the grain markets this week? Good morning to Openfields, Alice Killam.
Good morning, Steve. Much like the cricket this week, the market is beginning to get a little more interesting. These are global values which are moving, and we are piggybacking them with the simple calculation that the replacement product to make up for our shortfall is becoming more expensive. So the main stories for Friday then. First of all, the USDA October report. Friday might be a strange day as most of the action will happen after 5 p.m. when our markets are just finishing off for the week. The key numbers that most will be looking out for will be the row crops, corn and beans. There is quite a range from the trade estimates, and though nobody is really predicting a big swing, it always has the potential to upset. Then we move to Russia. In addition to the notable increase in the intensity of their attacks on Ukrainian freight in recent days, which does prompt the question once again about the ability or the keenness for some to continue, surely freight rates will increase. It is being reported widely that the Russian Ag Ministry were meeting at the end of this week to discuss the speed of exporting their crops so far this season. Clearly, lots of things could happen here, other than some kind of restriction that really would kick things off. But in addition to the USDA report, I would imagine many eyes will be on this. The obvious winner, if something has changed, is the US, who are pricing their goods to do business. A lack of follow-through from the Chinese package 10 days ago has maintained the bearish view that there is not enough demand to get rid of the US crop. But a problem with supply in the Black Sea would change this quite obviously, so one to watch over the coming days. The UK market, as we've discussed, has moved up simply because everybody else has. Replacement product gets more expensive, so we all climb. DEFRA released their production estimates for England, which is old news for most of us, but we must keep an eye on the import numbers which are coming in. This will be feed grains, both wheat and maize, which is the cheapest by a long way, and also milling wheat, which has bitten hard in the last few days. A quick word on milling wheat, which has suffered from imports bought a few months ago, but have now arrived in UK ports. Premiums have certainly narrowed as feed wheat has climbed, with £50 just about achievable if you're very close to a mill. This may change. Will the UK miller still be able to source quality product throughout the first and second quarter of 2025? Does it exist? And if it does, will the premium widen out once again? I think the sensible target should still be £250 per tonne. If you can see this in a sensible month for movement, then I think some sales will be being made. Let's talk feed wheat also for a second. A couple of big bids have been thrown around in the last couple of days. My only advice here is to check to see where things are destined to go, the obvious issue being ergot. After what seems like months of negative news, it's very refreshing to report on some news which is beginning to lift our values. One of my faults is that I can turn into a bull very quickly and miss the opportunity to trade something, so I'm trying my best to advise a little at a time approach to this rise in the market, now quite a decent one, which of course is a sensible advice to give. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, October 185 to 195, January 190 to 200, May 200 to 210. Feed barley, October 150 to 160, February 155 to 165, and May 160 to 170. Oilseed rape, November 395 to 400, and May 410 to 415. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Some heavy rain on the way tonight and again midweek. After a couple of cold nights, it's a mild week with daytime highs in the mid-teens Celsius and just light winds varying from the southeast to the southwest. A reminder, it's the Lincolnshire Business Showcase at the Showground on Wednesday this week. Congratulations to Nicholas Watts of Vinehouse Farm, who's a finalist in the British Farming Awards Arable Farmer of the Year. And another fantastic night on Wednesday at Lincolnshire Rural Support Network's annual charity evening, auction and AGM, with some very powerful messages, great strides being made by LRSN and nearly £19,000 raised for the charity during the evening. And great to catch up with plenty of good friends too. I'm Steve Orchard. Until next week's Farming Programme podcast, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.